The Anything for Selena podcast is hosted by native El Pasoan Maria Garcia, who spent over 10 years as a reporter right here on our border before heading to Columbia University to obtain her master's degree in arts and culture journalism. She's currently the senior editor of arts and culture at WBUR in Boston, and she's also the host of the Anything for Selena podcast. Through her work on this podcast, she goes on an intimate, revelatory quest to understand how Selena has become a potent symbol for tensions around race, class, and body politics in the United States. Welcome, Maria, to State of the Arts.
Hi, Marina. I'm so happy to be here, especially with you. I've always been like such a huge fan of the way you sort of like rally around El Paso, the way you are so civic and community oriented. And so I'm just a Marina stan, and I'm really happy to be here.
Oh my God. And I'm like, I'm such a big Maria fan. So I'm just like, oh my God. And like watching you go through this beautiful journey, I'm just like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And to see this podcast manifest in the most beautiful way. I mean, it's got to feel amazing. How do you feel?
Oh yeah, it feels really cathartic for sure to like finally be here. You know, we've been working on the podcast actively full-time for a little over a year now. And this has sort of been a pipe dream for me, like just sort of a glimmer in my eye for, gosh, over 3 years now. And so it feels really, really cathartic. I got an email today from the New York Times being like, can we have a digital like portrait shoot with you? And to hear that it's gotten so many like great reviews, and it feels cathartic, because for the last year I've been, because of COVID, isolating, you know, but also because just like the nature of the writing, I've been looking very internally. I've been feeling like very inward facing, you know, it's the podcast is very intimate and personal, and I've had to sort of excavate inside. And so now to see like this thing that I've been, you know, working on, this baby, be out in the world, it feels really, really surreal.
And you go deep. Yes, it's Anything for Selena. And yes, Selena is the tide. But I mean, that second episode, I was like in tears at the end. You know, it's like the perfect Selena song, but then your story, I mean, you went all up in there. Did you have a hard time kind of cracking through your own layers to get to where you got?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I knew that I couldn't tell a story about Selena without it being personal, because I mean, you've known me for a while, you know that I've like always been
super
a huge
fan.
Selena fan. Yeah,
that is not a secret.
Yeah, and you know, like I always tell journalists I work with, like, do not abandon the lens from which you're looking at the world. Like, there's no such thing as coming to a story from a place of nowhere. Like, we all come to a story from the place in the world that we occupy. And it's up to us to sort of own our lens so that we can tell a richer story and also recognize our blind spots. And so like, I knew that I had to tell this story from my perspective, which is like a Selena devotee. But then I had to sort of dig deeper and say like, okay, why am I a Selena devotee? It's not just because she was a super talented artist, which she was, of course. Like it's not just because of her fashion choices. It's not just because of the music that fused American influences and Mexican influences. I mean, I go deeper than that, and I sort of talk about the way she touched me as a person, you know, even at such a young age. I knew that it mattered that Selena embodied these two parts of myself that at the time felt very, very divorced, because I was so young. So I knew even from a young age, because I felt it, even though I hadn't intellectualized it, even though I hadn't, you know, articulated it, I felt it. Like, I felt how profound it was to see a woman take pride in an identity that at the time felt so derided and felt like something that a lot of people didn't take pride in. And to see this woman not only take pride, but like take sort of effervescent pride in who she was, that was like really, really powerful.
Well, and you said something, she messed up Spanish, she messed up English, she, you know, again, kind of like in public all the time. And it's like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I was doing that all the time too. I mean, mind you, we're not singers. We weren't prolific singers, but we're little girls on the border. And to see somebody just do that and stumble through it, it was kind of refreshing, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, and to see her do that and have the world love her for it was really like rare. Even as a little girl, you know, when I used to go back to Ciudad Juarez and visit my cousins, they started calling me a pocha. I became so self-conscious of my Spanish because it always felt to me like people in Mexico were starting to reject me because I wasn't as articulate and I wasn't as fluent as I had become in English. And I am fluent to a certain extent. Like a simple conversation, I got you, I'm fluent. Like I can pass. But then once the conversation starts becoming layered and more complex, like I'm much more articulate in English. And so since I was a little girl, like I struggled with this and I felt this sort of rejection from, you know, my Mexican friends and Mexican folks in Ciudad Juarez. And then on the other side of the border in the States, where I was half of the week, I also felt sort of a rejection because this was the 90s, the age of assimilation, the age that rewarded only like the most assimilated. And so to see somebody who navigated these worlds in a way that I was trying to figure out how to navigate, to see somebody who didn't speak perfect Spanish, but who called herself a Mexicana and who said, I'm proud to be a Mexicana. To me, it was as if she told, you know, Mexico, like, I don't sound like you. My accent is different, but I have a right to claim this heritage. It's mine too. And then of course she was also like American, and to see an embrace of that duality stayed with me like profoundly all of my life, for sure.
How long did it take you to embrace your duality?
I mean, I don't think that there's like a moment. I do remember, you know, a shift inside of me when she died, because I do remember feeling like this deep sense of loss, not just for her, but for what she represented. Mm-hmm. And I do remember, even at that young age, thinking like, you know, Selena didn't hide who she was. How could I? But I think that beyond that moment, like, it's sort of a lifelong journey, I think, to unpack those layers of like self-loathing that we develop from this sort of like rejection and this internalization of that rejection. And so like, I don't feel that way anymore. And I don't think I felt like that for a few years, but I think in different aspects of my life, it was sort of like this journey to get here for sure.
Well, and I wanted to talk to that because now you're the example for young women kind of coming up, because, you know, growing up on the border doesn't stop. This duality story doesn't stop. We keep having young people grow up in this environment. And then, you know, to see you self-actualize in this beautiful way. What do you say to young women right now who are maybe going through that? Because, I mean, I know how that felt. I know you know how. I mean, you clearly know how that felt. You made a whole podcast about it. But people are still going through it. You got through. You broke through. What would you say to those young women growing up right now on the border who maybe think they can't or haven't figured it out yet?
Yeah, I would say that the lens through which growing up as a fronteriza or embodying these two cultures and feeling that tension, that lens like is valuable to the world. Mm-hmm. It gives you insight into a layer of humanity that not everybody gets to experience, into sort of like a way of being human that not everybody gets to experience. And so value that insight, like value that lens, and like know that it makes you stronger, you know, it makes your perspective much more insightful. It makes your observations more incisive because you're able to see, like I said, like just a part of humanity that not a lot of people are exposed to. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's sort of the biggest lesson, is like knowing that the part of the world that I'm from and the perspective that it gave me and the insight that it gave me is not a disadvantage, but in fact, it is like the most important thing about me to an extent. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's your superpower.
Yeah, totally. So I would say, like, own it, embrace it, love it, recognize that it's a gift. Like, it's a gift to grow up with that. Even if sometimes it doesn't feel like a gift, it's a gift to grow up with that duality. And so just keep going and embrace it.
Do you think for you going away helped you lean into your gift or helped you see that it was a gift? Because you spent a lot of time, you grew up here, you reported here, and then, you go to the East Coast.
You know what? I'm gonna say yes and no. No, in a way that, like, I loved being from here when I was from here. Like, I hear so many people who are like, it's only until I moved away that I realized how special El Paso was. I'm like, no, girl, I knew.
It's pretty special. It's pretty
Yeah.
dang fantastic.
Like, it's only, until I moved away that I realized how special the border was. And it's like, that's why I chose to stay as a reporter here as long as I did. I could have moved away earlier, but I wasn't done, and I wasn't done like telling the stories of the people here. Like, I knew how special it was to be here. I knew how special of a perspective this place gave me, and I didn't need to go away to
To get
understand
that.
that. Yeah, not at all. But yes, in a way that, like, I think that being away from here made me, and we're gonna get a little metaphysical here, but
Let's do
like,
it. Let's do it.
yeah, but like, it made me recognize, like, how connected I was, not just to the culture, but to the actual, like, land. And I start off the podcast talking about the actual, like, place here, like the smell of the rain on the border and what it feels like to be here after a scarce desert rain, because, like, I realized how connected I feel to, like, the physical space that is the border. Like, I've been back for a few months because I wanted to write the podcast here. And I rented a little house right by an arroyo with, like, the view of the Franklin Mountains. And I realized, like, this is the land that, like, my body feels at peace here. Like, something clicks when I land on the plane here. My neck makes peace with my shoulders, and my body just knows, my body knows, like, this is the land that made you. Like, this is your home. And so I didn't have to move away to know that, but I think I had to move away to recognize just how connected I was, not just to the culture, but, like, to the actual land, to the actual physical place that is, like, El Paso and the border.
I love it. In just a few, we'll be back with Maria Garcia and we'll talk more, Selena, on State of the Arts.